And Alice comments on this. It is a foregone conclusion exactly which feelings are good and valuable for the child or the adult and which are not. Exuberance, actually a sign of strength, is assigned to the latter category and consequently attacked. Quote from another pedagogue, Landmann. Quote, one of the traits in children that border on abnormality is exuberance, which can take many forms, but usually begins with exceptionally agitated activity of the voluntary muscles, followed to a greater or lesser degree by other manifestations, should an aroused desire not be immediately satisfied. Children who are just beginning to learn to talk and whose dexterity is still limited to reaching for nearby objects need only be unable to grasp an object or not be allowed to keep it. If they have a tendency toward an excitable disposition, they will then start to scream and make unrestrained movements. Malice develops quite naturally to this child, malice, for whom feelings are no longer subject to the general laws of pleasure and pain. That means you couldn't force him by beating to be quiet. That the child not only no longer for malice develops naturally to this child, for whom feelings are no longer subject to the general laws of pleasure and pain, but have degenerated from their natural state to such an extent that the child not only loses all capacity for sympathy, but evinces pleasure in the discomfort and pain of others. Boy, is that projection, huh? A child's ever-growing discomfort at the loss of the pleasure he would have had if his wishes had been granted eventually finds satisfaction only in revenge, i.e., in the comforting knowledge that his peers have been subjected to the same feeling of discomfort or pain. The more often the child experiences the comforting feeling of revenge, the more this becomes a need which seeks satisfaction at every idle moment. In this stage, the child uses unruly behavior to inflict every possible unpleasantness, every conceivable annoyance on others, only for the sake of alleviating the pain he feels because his wishes are not to be fulfilled. This fault leads with logical consistency to the next. His fear of punishment awakens the need to tell lies, to be devious and deceitful, to use these stratagems that require only more practice in order to be successful. The irresistible desire to be malicious gradually develops in the same way as does the penchant for stealing, kleptomania. Willfulness also appears as a secondary but no less serious consequence of the original fault. As in the case of all illnesses that are difficult to cure, so too in the case of the psychic fault of exuberance, the greatest care must be devoted to prophylaxis, to prevention of the disorder. The best way for an education to reach this goal is by adhering unswervingly to the principle of shielding the child as much as possible from all influences that might stimulate feelings, be they pleasant or painful. And that is from, unquote, from Mr. Landman, editor, On the Character Fault of Exuberance in Children from 1896. My comment, clearly the point of totalitarian child rearing is to desensitize children to what their bodies say. Alice comments on this. Significantly, cause and effect are confused here, and what is attacked as a cause is something that the pedagogues themselves have brought about. This is the case not only in pedagogy, but in psychiatry and criminology as well. Once wickedness, quote unquote, has been produced in a child by suppressing vitality, any measure taken to stamp it out is justified. And then she continues with our next poisonous pedagogue. In school, discipline precedes the actual teaching. There is no sounder pedagogical axiom than the one that children must first be trained before they can be taught. There can be discipline without instruction, but no instruction without discipline. We insist, therefore, that learning in and of itself is not discipline, is not a moral endeavor, but discipline is an essential part of learning. This must be kept in mind when administering discipline. Discipline is, as stated above, not merely words, but deeds. If presented in words, it is not instruction, but commands. It proceeds from this that discipline, as the Old Testament word indicates, is basically chastisement, musar. The perverse will, which to its own and others' detriment is not in command of itself, that is to say, still exists, must be broken. Continuing, discipline is, as Schleiermacher puts it, life inhibiting, in a moment of honesty, is at the very least curtailment of vital activity insofar as the latter cannot develop as it wishes, but is confined within specific limits and subjected to specific rules. Depending on the circumstances, however, it can also mean restraint. In other words, partial suppression of enjoyment, of the joy of living. This can be true even on a spiritual level. For example, the member of a church congregation can be deprived temporarily of the highest possible enjoyment, the enjoyment of Holy Communion, until he has regained his religious resolve. A consideration of the idea of punishment reveals that in the task of education, healthy discipline must always include corporal punishment. Its early and firm but sparing application is the very basis of all genuine discipline, because it is the power of the flesh that needs most to be broken. And he concludes, where human authorities are no longer capable of maintaining discipline, divine authority steps in forcibly and bows down both individuals and nations under the insufferable yoke of their own wickedness. And Alice comments on this. Schleiermacher's inhibition of life is openly avowed here and extolled as a virtue. But like many moralists, the author overlooks the fact that warm and genuine feelings are unable to grow without the vital soil of exuberance. And I comment of Alice's. Inclusion of hidden power in Alice's analysis allows us to consider that the author here did not overlook at all the fact that the methods advocated would eradicate warm and genuine feelings. As Alice herself has pointed out, the suppression of feelings is the point. Alice, despite the very titles the pedagogues choose, for instance, of families and nations, telling us as much that these pedagogues have a larger agenda, she misses the conscious intent behind this miseducation.